And now the opinion page. We just heard from several Iraqis about the sad details of everyday life in Iraq. Here at home, the war tends to be viewed in big picture terms. Politicians on all sides debate the next policy step or the best political or military solution. To Francis Fukuyama, there is no choice anymore. The surge, he says, is the last military card the U.S. had to play and a bluff that will soon be called. The question is no longer if or when the United States should leave Iraq, he says, but how. He made an argument in an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times earlier this month, and he joins us in a moment. What's the best end game for the U.S. in Iraq? How do we get out and minimize the cost? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Francis Fukuyama is a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington. His latest book is titled America at the Crossroads, Democracy, Power, and the Neoconservative Legacy. And he's with us in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program.
Oh, thank you.
And you begin with an assumption. Obviously, Congress is still debating war funding. But even Republicans at this point are saying if we don't see progress from this surge in September, at that point, they're going to reconsider. You're sort of going outside of this political paradigm and saying, look, as you look, there's no talk about sustaining this operation beyond the next election.
Well, that's right. I think there's really only one outcome by the end of this year that will allow us to get out safely with the mission largely accomplished, and that's if we can say that there is an Iraqi military and police that is capable of defending the country once American forces are gone. And I think that even if the surge works in the short run in terms of reducing violence, reducing the level of American casualties, we will not know that fact about the Iraqi military, and we're going to get into primary season in January, and it seems to me basically the choice is we will not lose if we stay, but we are going to have to maintain 160,000 troops, a constant trickle of casualties, billions of dollars spent every month to maintain this position, and we can do it for 5 years or 10 years. But politically, I think that is a loser. I really don't see anybody at that point continuing to support the operation. And so therefore, I think the pressure will be on, including the conservative Republicans, to get out.
And at this point, even they are saying, look, we're waiting to hear from General Petraeus, but if he doesn't give us good news come September, it's time to reconsider.
Well, yes, over the weekend, a lot of people, Mitch McConnell and others, were signaling that in a way they were looking for, in a way, the excuse. So this two-month vacation that the Iraqi parliament may or may not take mm-hmm. was one of them.
There is also you drew some parallels to the end game in Vietnam. In some ways, worse, you say, though in some ways better.
Well, in Vietnam in 1972, after we had drawn down our combat forces, you still had a South Vietnamese army that had 1 million men, at least on paper, and that army was strong enough to hold the country together for about 3 years until the final collapse in 1975, and that allowed us to draw our forces out in an orderly fashion. We don't have anything like that in Iraq right now, and I think people don't appreciate how difficult actually withdrawing is going to be, because as soon as you get to a smaller and smaller force level, protecting the troops that we still have remaining in Iraq becomes a very, very big problem without a decent Iraqi army to cover that retreat.
And there are very large facilities and large numbers of assets that need to be pulled out.
Well, you've got these enormous bases, Camp Liberty and Camp Victory, and you've got to somehow decide, are you going to turn that equipment over to the Iraqi military? I suspect at this point we don't trust them sufficiently to do that, and so therefore you've got to dismantle all of that and figure out a way to get it safely out of the country.
Yet at the same time, while you say we have nothing like that million-man South Vietnamese army that was there in the 1970s, on the other hand, there is not the equivalent of a North Vietnamese army.
Well, that's the one saving grace. The people that are dangerous to us are very splintered. So you've got the foreign jihadists, you've got various Baathists or Iraqi nationalists. A lot of them are fighting each other as much as they're fighting us, and the likelihood that you're going to have the equivalent of North Vietnam taking over the whole country once we leave, I think, is pretty small. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, that's the good part of the political package.
And yet, even if a withdrawal can be orderly, even if it can be accomplished, as you suggest, there's very little reason to have much confidence in this Iraqi government.
once it becomes very clear that we're on our way out, the whole political dynamic, I think, changes, and everybody has got to figure for themselves whether it's safer to stay in uniform or to go with the particular militia or the political party that they think is going to win the ensuing power struggle. And so the disintegration could actually come relatively quickly.
And at that point, pulling out gets more and more difficult.
Well, it gets difficult, but on the other hand, I think that a lot of people have posed a worst-case scenario once we withdraw, that you get a civil war that then draws all of the regional powers in. And I think there's some experience in Lebanon and other places where these civil wars do tend to burn themselves out over time.
Over time, it took Lebanon the better part of 10 years.
Well, it did, but I think from our standpoint, the fact that you have all these bitterly anti-American groups that are now fighting each other rather than fighting the United States, and this is a very cynical point of view, but that's not the worst scenario from the standpoint of American interests, if you can keep it contained inside Iraq.
Let's see if we get some listeners involved in the conversation. We're speaking with Francis Fukuyama about the end game in Iraq. His op-ed was titled Beating an Orderly Retreat. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Bob is on the line. Bob in Chicago.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
One of our main goals was to establish a democracy in the area, and we've already held elections there. So I'm wondering why have there been no discussions about putting the issue of to stay or go to a vote of the Iraqi population?
A plebiscite, is that an option?
Well, I think, in effect, the last election, the congressional election in November, was a plebiscite on the war, and I think it's pretty clear.
That was an American plebiscite. He's talking about asking the Iraqi people to vote.
Well, I think organizing another election in Iraq is going to be pretty pretty difficult at this point. In a sense, the Iraqi parliament is there to make that that decision, and there is this this motion to ask the United States to leave, which again may be taken as a signal on the part of American politicians that this is the time for us to make a, or at least it gives us a certain political cover for making an exit. But there's clearly a substantial part of Iraq that would not be unhappy to see us go.
Bob, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Whatever, it's going to be a fig leaf, don't you think? Whatever excuse people come up with.
Well, Henry Kissinger in Vietnam, of course, talked about the decent interval between the withdrawal of American forces and the collapse of South Vietnam, and I think our problem, in a certain sense, is that fig leaf isn't going to be there. That you may take an excuse, that you may set an artificial deadline that the Iraqi political class you know is not going to make, and then that gives you the excuse for leaving. But I have the sense that the ensuing chaos is going to probably be on us much more quickly than it was in Vietnam, and so the connection between the withdrawal and what happens later is going to be clearer. The fig leaf will be a smaller one.
And probably full of holes. You pose some questions in your op-ed, and I'm just going to read them just for people to think about. The questions we need to address include: how do we reconfigure our forces to provide advice, training, and support rather than engaging in combat? How can we withdraw safely without a serious Iraqi army to cover our retreat? How do we dismantle enormous bases like Camp Liberty or Camp Victory and protect the diminishing numbers of U.S. troops in the country? Do we trust the Iraqi military and police sufficiently to turn over our equipment to them? How do we protect the lives of those who collaborated with us? The images of South Vietnamese allies hanging to the skid pads of U.S. helicopters departing Saigon should be burned into our memories.
That last point, I think, is an extremely important one, and it's very difficult. There's something like 2 million Iraqis now that have fled the country. The United States has let very few of them in. Unlike South Vietnam, it's going to be a much more difficult proposition for us because I assume that there are a number of people that want to do us harm that would want to infiltrate that group of emigres. On the other hand, it seems to me we've got an enormous moral responsibility to take care of people that worked with us in this whole project, and the idea of leaving them behind or leaving them in camps in Jordan or other parts of the Middle East, not able to get on with their lives or come to the United States or resettle as many Vietnamese did, I think is just inexcusable.
Yes, we remember, of course, the pictures, the images from the roof of the embassy in Saigon, but people do tend to forget the suffering that continued for many years afterwards, the boat people who left the hundreds of thousands of refugees who lived in awful conditions in camps. But the equivalence of those, that's going to be another ongoing difficulty.
And unfortunately, it's something in American foreign policy that's happened repeatedly, that we make these commitments, we act as if we're going to stay forever, and then we get tired of them, and it's not us, in a way, that really has to live with the long-term consequences of that. It's the people in the country. And so I do think that we've got this very great obligation to do what we can for them as this, what seems to me an almost inevitable withdrawal, begins to unfold.
Mm. We're speaking with Francis Fukuyama. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Daniel. Daniel with us from San Antonio.
Hello?
Hi, Daniel. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I was just going to ask Mr. Fukuyama if, what does he think, since I feel like the democratic experiment in Iraq has obviously been not too successful. Why don't we basically try to replicate what we did in South Vietnam, stand up an army as fast as possible, and essentially turn it over to the Shiites, let them basically oppress the Sunnis, which is a cynical point of view, but like as he said earlier, it's not the worst of outcomes.
Well,
interest.
One of the biggest mysteries of the way that the Bush administration has handled this whole war is why they didn't put more effort in standing up this Iraqi army. It was always a secondary mission to the primary mission of engaging in combat ourselves. And even the surge was not an inevitable strategy. You could have devoted those resources to really getting a decent Iraqi police and military in place. I think, unfortunately, now it's simply going to be too late for that. You may try as a last resort to switch to a training mission, but I suspect that at this point it's late. In effect, if we withdraw over the next 18 months, we will be turning things over to these militias, because if there's a disintegration of the central military, the people that are going to pick up the pieces are the ones that are organized. So that'll be the Mahdi Army and the Badr Brigades and all of the other militias. And so, in effect, that's what we are going to be doing. I think people should be clear that that's one of the consequences of a withdrawal.
Well, some might also say that, in effect, one of the things we have been doing is in the training the troops of General Petraeus, now the man who's going to be the hero of Baghdad, but he was in charge of training Iraqi forces, and that, in effect, what he did was train Shia militias. Not his intent, but that was the effect.
Not his intent. It's certainly the case that the training mission was always a little bit ambiguous. We were never willing to equip the Iraqi military with the armor, even just the personal body armor and vehicles and logistics that American forces had, because we didn't trust them enough. We were very worried that units would defect or that the equipment would end up in the hands of various militias. I suspect a lot of it actually did end up in the hands of those militias. So you're right, to a large extent, not intentionally, but a lot of that effort has seeped out and has strengthened the Shiites. Now, again, in the longer run, if what you're preparing for is a civil war in which you want to try to keep these forces balanced so that nobody takes over the whole country, that's not the worst thing. That's not the worst. That's not the worst outcome. But it's certainly very different from what we intended, to have a central government with its own army and police. Mm.
Thanks for the call, Daniel. Let's see if we can get. This is Chris on the line. Chris is with us from Minneapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
I understand we are in the process of building the largest embassy in the world in Iraq, and 18 permanent bases is the number that I'm familiar with. I don't believe we're ever planning to leave. And if we do, who's going to stay behind and protect all of that? And if we don't, did we just waste billions and billions of dollars?
That is a really good question. If you actually have a substantial withdrawal of American forces, I doubt that you can hang on to the green zone in that expensive embassy. Force protection, what the military calls force protection, that's basically securing your own troops. There are certain economies of scale to that, and unless you have a fairly large, robust military, it's hard to even do no more than protect yourself. And so if you really are contemplating withdrawal, you may not be able to protect that big embassy in the green zone.
And there may have been ambitions at one time for permanent U.S. bases in Iraq.
Is long gone. I think that once you start getting out, the residual political cost of maintaining forces in country is going to be pretty great, and just operationally, I'm not sure that that's going to be possible.
And what about also very substantial facilities in neighboring countries, primarily Kuwait?
Well, that that I think is probably not in as much danger. And in the meantime, you've built up in Qatar and other
Gulf states.
Other Gulf states. So I think there will be an American presence elsewhere in the Persian Gulf. But I think once you start getting out substantially of Iraq, I'm not sure that there's an intermediate point where you can hang on with bases out in the periphery.
Mm. Thank you, Chris. Let's see if we squeeze in one last call. Andrew with us from the Bay Area in California.
Yes, am I on now?
Yes, if you could make it quick. We're running out of time.
All right. It's basically related to what some of the statements you just made. I don't see why we can't pull into the desert, protect the oil, keep an international counting of it. We have high tech, which can definitely protect boundaries, especially if we're not near any, you know, direct fighting or away from the IEDs. We keep track of the revenue. As soon as a semi-responsible government that we respect is in place, we then agree to turn over the funds.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't mean to cut you off, Andrew, but we are running out of time. I assume he's meaning the southern oil fields just north of Kuwait. And is that a possibility in any way?
Well, we haven't been able to control that with a large presence. We haven't been able to protect the boundaries with all of our high technology now. So I don't really understand how this is going to happen if we withdraw to bases on the periphery.
Mm. Interesting questions. Francis Fukuyama, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Francis Fukuyama, professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. You can read his op-ed from the Los Angeles Times. There's a link at npr.org/blogofthenation. We also have information at the blog on how to download our daily podcast. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.